Well, it's a well-known verse that would relate to this idea of recreation, recreation. Isaiah 40:31, right? What recreates us? Renews, invigorates. Okay, he says, wait on the Lord. Now, I don't want to get into a long thing. You do well to do a study on waiting on the Lord. I think we have, again, narrowed down in some kind of form what it means to wait on God in a way that may not be comprehensive enough in a biblical sense. And it may narrow down to a thing that really doesn't renew us, as this passage is speaking of. Now, I may jump to the other word, amusement, and I'll have you do the same thing with that. Okay. All right. Put it neutral. Now, does that fit in Scripture? That doesn't. Recreate does. So when you, I think there's a place for this unstringing the bow. In fact, I've got an illustration from the life of the Apostle John that's just the very thing he said. One eager young disciple came in from the hunt, and John was sitting there in the courtyard with some kind of bird, a partridge or something in his lap, just with his eyes closed, enjoying the sun and stroking this bird. And this young disciple asked him why he was wasting his time. Why wasn't he, you know? And John looked at him and said, why is your bow unstrung? And he said, so it'll be good for the hunt next time. So my bow will retain its resiliency. And so John let the matter drop. So there, this change of pace idea, this... But if we start running to cisterns that we have hewn out for our renewing of strength, we're going in the wrong direction, according to Jeremiah. Because we've left the fountain of living waters to find some other source of renewal. So that's the only thing I'd say there, is that and then earlier, the quote, I find recreation in job, family, lots of things. It's as much an attitude and perspective toward what we're doing as anything. Now, that's not possible in every job. Cal, you brought that up earlier. And there are a lot of people in jobs that probably are not going to provide that kind of thing for them. Yes. Yeah, that's a great passage. In fact, it draws together a number of thoughts. What direction are you going with that, Bill?
I just wondered how that fit in this whole...
Well, I think it has to do with the renewal, the revitalizing.
It seems like there are times where you're just getting wore out that you need to say, wait a minute, I need to recuperate.
Yes.
Here.
And what happened?
And
they never got it, did they? Now that's Philippians 4:11-13. The wave came over, and there was nothing to do. And so we will not always get what we set out to achieve in those times. But it shows that our Lord acknowledged the need for that kind of thing. And so I would say, if you think of recreation in terms of recreation, what renews and revitalizes, and is not something that is divorced from the Lord, that is amusement, that puts me in neutral, where just whatever happens, happens. Another thing that came up on these was... Oh, here's the statement. But it comes out in a number of different ways. It's mainly socializing. I love people. I thrive on ministering to them. But I have problems sitting down and studying. Others have said something to the relation to the aspect that I get carried away with socializing. It affects sometimes work, sometimes lack of sleep, that kind of thing. Keith, are you one of those?
I think everybody else thinks so.
What do I do about that? Okay, so that's one factor, is how has God put us together? And that's an important factor. We need to reckon with what we're like. For example, for me, my greatest frustration as a navigator is evangelism, because the way I'm put together, I function best in the context of natural developed relationships. Plunk me in the middle of Ford Motor Company, and in that context, I will develop those relationships and outreach consequently. Plunk me in the middle of the Army, same thing happens. Plunk me in the middle of Navigator Headquarters, and if I want to do evangelism, I've got to figure out what, if God can't get me into some kind of context where in the natural flow of relationships, the same thing can happen. But I'm not the one that's going to go out and start knocking on doors to create a Bible study. So I'm working as best I can to develop some natural relationships in the area, but it's slow because it's such a different context. But so we have to figure out how we are, and that's an important aspect. But there are some other things. Okay. I may have missed, I thought I was tracking with you one direction, and then Chris, I may have missed it. I thought you were talking about I have a responsibility to do certain things or to be part of some things or...
There's expectation for us here in our situation.
Yes. Yes. So I have responsibilities to fulfill.
And not to neglect those.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Good. Okay, you've hit on an area that I thought of. If I am highly relational with people, but I find that I don't have that same excitement of relationship with God and wanting to be with Him, then my relational direction with people may be a cover for an inability to really relate. Do you see what I'm saying? It could mask some things that I'm unwilling to face. If I find that what is true in the way I'm relating with people is not true in the way I'm relating with God. So that would be an area to check. How do I love God? Well, obey Him. How do I love Him? 1 John says, by loving others. And so the two are inseparable. It's not one commandment and then the other. There are two commandments that are both the same and alike. The second is like, Mark 12 says. It's not in order of priority. It's simply another commandment, another statement of commandment, and it's just like the first. Not one, two, three, but another. And so I look at my people relationships, and I view that as a reflection of my relationship with God. I look at my relationship with God and view that as a reflection of my relationship with people. And I look at the two together. Let's see if I... Oh, we're almost out of time. Let's see. Work demands. Uncontrollable circumstances. Lack of personal discipline. Let's just speak to the issue of work demands and uncontrollable circumstances. How do you handle that? Okay, good. There's a certain acceptance. There's a looking to God in that situation. What are some other things that might be involved in that? Okay, there may be a communication need. Do you realize what you're doing, boss? So that's another area to consider. What's another possibility?
Then maybe if, for instance, the mobile crew has to set up the Great Hall in 15 minutes and they have to redo the whole thing or something like that, then that means that there's some things that get knocked off the list of what you do. So you don't vacuum or something like that because it's not as important.
Yes. Yeah, it comes down a lot to the ought to's versus what's really important. Another thing may be my own lack of flexibility, my unwillingness to adjust and kind of go with the flow, where I'm willing then, in light of that, to cancel something I had planned in order to make sure that I'm meeting my responsibilities or whatever. There's a need to make adjustments. The other thing I'd say, just by way of practical, is the tendency with scheduling is to fill them up. And life won't let you do that. What I've read said leave 20% unscheduled. That's probably a good rule of thumb. Some people may need to leave more than that unscheduled. What I try to do with college students, for example, since they write their own schedules almost outside of their few hours in class, I say, well, let's look at your class time. Let's put parameters on your studies because you never study enough, right? So I say, if you are a middle management business executive, you're moving in that direction, I don't know any that are putting in less than 50 hours a week, so let's figure for you about a 50-hour week. How many hours are you going to be in class? Then you have, they'll spend 20 hours sitting in a classroom, then you've got 30 hours of study. Okay? Figure out when you're going to do that study. Now you've got a Bible study, you've got a couple other things, plug those in. Now you've still got open spots. Do not fill those in. Now, Colette comes to me and says, Roger, I'd really like to get some time. We need to talk about the conference coming up. I hadn't planned to do that. How do I make my decision? I do have a responsibility to the conference. I do have a responsibility to my studies. I do have a responsibility in terms of my spiritual development and all the rest of it. How do I make my decision? Well, my schedule helps me make the decision. Because I look at that and say, well, I've got an open slot here. If I give Colette this hour, I can fit this hour of study there. But if I do that, that means I've got to say no to so-and-so who also wanted to do something. And so then I start making value judgments. But without the schedule, I don't have the basis for making that kind of decision. And so that's where a tool like that becomes very helpful to you. Because it gives you the ability to make decisions with some sense of reason behind it. Okay, I think we better quit there. Simply saying life is a life wholly occupied with Jesus Christ and becoming like Him. It's a maturity that has its aim, as its aim to be like Christ, and pursues that aim relentlessly. It seems to me that that's the gist of Philippians 3, that the mature attitude is the attitude, I'm not there, but I'm putting all my effort into getting there. And then that can be characterized by a unified perception of life, the way I view life, a narrowness of objective, and an acceptance of what is beyond one's control, my control. So that may be another way to summarize an earlier statement where we tried to write some kind of definition of what this day has been all about. And it, where I do not view life segmented, but more as a continuum and integrated. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Dr. Jim Houston, the Chancellor of Regent College in Vancouver, British Columbia, was with us. He was the founding president of Regent College, and the purpose in his mind of founding that college was to provide laymen with interdisciplinary study so that they could integrate faith in their profession. And he is about to abandon that. when I talked with him, he said, I've decided that it's not a matter of understanding and pulling things together, it's a matter of devotion, godliness. And again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the idea of life being a garden or like a suit of clothes, conforming to what I am. As I step into a situation, it's what I bring to it more than whether that's secular or whatever we would use. So it goes back to, I really believe this thought of being wholly occupied with the Lord is the primary need. Okay. Then to kind of attempt to summarize, how to live life based on Philippians. We said that 1:21 defines life, and that's what we're just speaking to. It gives me a sense that living is Christ. And I might say by living is Christ, it's not the idea of simply living for Him, but again, it's participating in His life. It's experiencing His life. So in any given situation, it's an opportunity to enter in with Him and experience what He has for me. And then we define the aim of life in 3, and we define attitude toward life in 4. And again, talking about the idea that the unified life, it's a view, a mindset. It's not seeing life as sacred and secular, not compartmentalized. And that allows me to enter in fully to every given situation as an opportunity to experience the life of Christ. In terms of a narrower life, perhaps a radicalized life. A life where we're actually doing less and thereby maybe doing more. It's a life that is becoming rather than achieving. It frees me from the need to cram my schedule full so that I'll feel important. It's simply the aim is to pursue Jesus. I just thought of something on the idea of not cramming life full and taking breaks. Let me see. The Book of Acts. Okay, Acts chapter 20. That's the chapter where Eutychus fell out of the window because he fell asleep from Paul's long preaching after an all-day seminar, all night actually. The next day, it says in verse 13, we went before to the ship, and we went ahead of Paul, and sailed to Assos. There, intending to take in Paul, for so he had appointed, minding himself to go afoot. It'd be easy to overlook that verse. It's a very significant verse. Paul's on his way to Jerusalem. He's been heavily engaged in ministry. He's just preached all night in Troas. And so what's his plan the next day? I need some time alone to think. I need some time with God. The ship's going to sail. There's, you know, it's like one of those things where you feel obligated to get on. He said, no, I won't do that. The schedule is such that I can walk the road to where the ship's going to come to unload its cargo at the next port. You guys go ahead. I just want to be alone. And so it's a good little verse on the idea. Another little interlude there to show that they were not supermen. They understood their needs and did something about it. Then I talked about accepting life. Stop trying to manage or control that which you cannot control. It allows us to experience peace and contentment. Maybe the ability to smell the flowers. Long time ago, I read a book, a collection of essays by children. And it had all the misspellings and everything, just printed in the book as their papers were turned in. They were second, third, fourth, fifth graders. Don't get perconal with a chicken. P-E-R-C-O-N-E-L. Don't get perconal with a chicken. And there were some essays on true greatness. And so that I thought of those when I was thinking about accepting life. One child wrote a story. It was went something like this. Once there was a lady that moved next to a pig farm. And at first, all she could smell was pig. But after a while, she learned to smell the flowers through pig. That was true greatness. That is great wisdom. Then I think there's another issue that maybe we would call meekness that is exemplified in this passage in Philippians 4. The ability to handle a bad situation. And again, drawing from true greatness. This one child wrote, there was a lady who did all her wash and laid it out, put it out on the line, but the line broke. And so she redid her wash. And this time she spread it out on the grass to dry. But a dog ran through the yard. And trampled all over her laundry. And she only said, "Ain't it queer? He didn't miss nothing." And redid her wash. That was true greatness. But only those that have done wash would know it. Maybe that helps put a little life into Philippians 4 for us. We talked about the idea of knowing yourself from Romans 12:3. Compensating for my weakness, capitalizing on my strengths, accepting weakness, not just compensating, and learning to develop helpful, useful habits, living actively, not passively. Let me use this compensating for weakness and accepting weakness in a marriage situation to help you understand the kind of thing I'm thinking about here. One of my dear friends, in fact, Gene and I were involved in marriage counseling with him. They're on the NAV staff. Neat people. He is, they're both relational to the point where, I thought this is going to be an interesting marriage. But she is what I would call dippy, absolutely unorganized. And he is highly organized. So he came to me with a problem. It was just eating his lunch. He would invite people over for dinner. And it was never anywhere near ready when they came. I mean, the kitchen was so disorganized, and it was just tearing him apart. I said, "Now, wait a minute. Why are you inviting people over? To fellowship. To eat on schedule?" "Well, no. To just enjoy a meal together and fellowship." I said, "Fine. Why don't you have your wife provide juice or punch or something? And so when your company arrives, you just have that out. You and your wife welcome them, greet them, and say, 'She's busy in the kitchen putting things together. Come on in the living room. Let's sit down.' You love to fellowship with them. And whenever dinner gets ready, great. Then have your dinner. And, you don't have to have the fellowship always after dinner or whatever. You just adjust to it. And enjoy the fact that, you're together and your purpose is fellowship here." Huh, never thought of that. Trying to conform her to his image of how he would do it. Instead of allowing for the... Now, she probably needed to learn some things on organization. He needed to learn some things on flexibility. But that's beside the point. The point is learning how to accept certain weaknesses and live with them. Make use of them. Instead of fighting them. That's the kind of thing I was thinking about there on compensating for weaknesses. Does that make sense? Has anybody experienced something like that? Yes. Well, you can do that in a team. You can do that in a housing unit. You don't have to be married to experience that kind of thing. And then finally, learning to plan. And that planning is done when your goals find their way into your schedule. And you're actually following the schedule.
What if you can't get locked into a schedule? I mean, like, for example, my job, I never have the same shift every week.
But you have a schedule.
Yeah, but it changes every week.
Well, I worked with fellows in the military ministry who are in the same situation, and so we wrote three or four schedules depending on how many times their shift changed. We knew what we wanted in their schedule, they did. So we just looked, alright, let's assume the schedule is always this, what would it look like? Now let's assume it's always this, what would it look like? Now, on the day of changeover, how will that affect you? Let's look at that realistically. Are you going to end up shortchanged or sleep or whatever? How do you handle that? And then let's adjust for that transition day. So, yeah, you've got a schedule.
I mean, one thing that worked for me in the past, although I don't do it anymore, is to, when I schedule what I want to do for the week or whatever, I schedule in there a time to do next week's schedule. Because I think the situation may be different from with the military, because if there's just three schedules, you know what those schedules are. But I think with almost everybody's schedule here, except for people who work 8 to 5, you know, 5 days or 4 days a week or whatever, that it depends on the conferences and things like that. So they're different every week. So I think the thing that helped me when I had a schedule like that in the past was to say, all right, on Sunday night at after dinner, I'm going to go out and for an hour and a half, I'm going to look at my schedule and figure out, you know, where I'm
going
to get those times in.
Same principle. Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah, it really worked.
So you schedule the schedule.
Yep.
Good. I probably go with the flow so easily. Those things never bothered me that much. And I can remember times when I was here, 2 a.m, Harvey Soderholm preaching to me while I was trying to stay awake till we finished the job. And so, it was fun. Assignments. I'd like to give you a choice between two areas, but for some people I've got a special assignment because of what I happen to see in your study. Now, if I had had time to really evaluate every study, I may have come up with something more specialized for more people. But I have two options for assignment. One would be Bible study. Now, what I mean by Bible study is taking the Bible study. If I've written on your Bible study, get some help on verse analysis or finish or some comment like that. Here's what I saw. I saw there were many very good beginnings. It was kind of like someone who had and some of them. The list of observations, and I mean, they really had some good stuff. It was like someone studying a roadmap, but never making the trip. Or another way to say it is, they'd done all this digging, and they got the foundation laid, and then they ordered in all the materials to build their house, and got them all delivered on site, and then left. And never built the house. That was my sense of the Bible study. That there was a lot of good work there. But so many left it. All the pieces. And never built the house.
You had mentioned in the sheet not to make a submit the application section. So I think maybe that might have been what you were seeing.
No.
Okay.
No, that's not what I was seeing. Let me use two things by way of illustration. One is from your study. There may have been some others, but I happened to... Bleary last night, I was looking, yours was toward the end, I thought, ooh, that's good. So, in terms of cross-references, there were any number of cross-references listed, but some of them I had no idea how they related to the study. They were just listed there. What did they add to the study? What did they contribute? How did they relate to anything in the study? And there was no indication. I happened to spot in Keith's two that were beautifully drawn in to a couple statements he made. And so, Keith, if you would just read those from your study, I think it would illustrate what I mean by building the house. I marked them in red. I said, this is good or something.
In relation to Philippians 1:21.
Okay, Philippians 1:21. Okay, now he's talking about Paul's willingness to go to heaven or stay and serve, and then brought in that passage out of Romans that put tremendous punch to rounding out the attitude and ideas of Paul in his view of ministry and life and service and so on. I just thought that was a great way to draw that in and just fit it in to a statement on Philippians 1:21. Now, you did the same thing with another reference.
Yeah, that was from Jeremiah 9:23-24, and compared that, sort of took the gist of that verse and plugged it into Philippians 1:21, a little chart type thing. It said, for me to live is money, and to die is to leave it all behind. For me to live is fame, and to die is to be forgotten. To live is power, and to die is to lose it all. Or for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Okay, so he took Jeremiah 9:23-24, where God says, this is what I want. You know, he's saying, Jeremiah 9:23-24, thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, let not the mighty man glory in his might, the rich man in his riches. And, okay. So Keith took those things and said, let's see how that fits in Philippians. And did you sense, hey, that gives me something to hold on to, something I could share, something memorable that makes the study richer? That's what a cross-reference should do for you. Okay. Now, Cal, I want to use yours because Cal did what I would like to see, have rarely seen, but have striven toward as Paul, not that I have attained, but this one thing I do. When I saw his study, what Cal had done is something I had picked up as a concept from Bob Boardman some 20 years ago. Once you've got all those pieces laid out, then integrate it into like a message or a teaching tool or an article that expresses all that you gleaned out of that passage. Now, knowing how Cal operated, I know he didn't do all the pieces and do that. He just did it. But Cal, would you simply read a couple paragraphs? I don't care what they are, but just to give a feel for how you... approaching the study, which I would say represents more of the house completed, having taken those pieces of cross-references and questions and observations and integrated them into a flowing statement of what was in there.
I'll work on
Okay, so he started his paragraph with a question. Now that's a question you would ask in your series of observations and questions. What is it? So, and he puts that in a narrative thing. Okay, now there he's made his conclusion from his study. After he asked the question, he says, this is what it is.
It is his obsession to know Christ better daily, to experience the power of his resurrection working in him, to commune with him, sharing in his sufferings on behalf of the saints and the unconverted, becoming like him in his death, and finally being raised from the dead. How are these things to be? First, he presses to know Christ. That he can do in searching the scriptures, for as Christ told the Pharisees,
okay, now look what Cal's doing. See, he's helping people to make application. He's drawing some interpretive elements from his study and saying, how could I do what Paul was doing? How could I follow in that train? And so on. That's enough, Cal. Thanks. I just felt that those two illustrations might help you to just lift your sights a bit. And several years ago, in doing my Bible study, I got frustrated because I had all these cross references. And I started experimenting with my own format of Bible study, trying to take these elements and bring them together in some comprehensive form, so that I could take it and share it with someone. I could preach it. I could refer to it, and not. You look at a list of cross references on a Bible study. Well, they tell you. When you go back to it a year later, well, they're just the basis to restudy. They don't, and I wouldn't want you not to restudy and freshen and deepen, but a more comprehensive thing gives you a basis to build and grow and develop in your understanding of the passage, instead of just doing another blank with all these parts. That's what I'd like to encourage you toward. So, option one would be to take your diggings and your parts and all the pieces and try to put that together into a comprehensive thing. Minimum, 6 hours. If you've read Foster's booklet on a meditation, Primer on Meditation, and have any of you read that? He starts out in his introduction with the idea that a professor made this guy sit in front of a stinking fish for some 100 hours. After 2 hours, he thought he'd made all the observations he could. So the professor had him sit there until he'd spent 100 hours looking at this dead fish, writing observations. And he said that after about 15 or 20 hours, he began to see things. Really see things. Yeah, about the fish. That you just don't see sitting there taking a first-hand glimpse at it. And I would say that many of you did a nice job of skimming the surface, but you didn't sit there and wrestle and ask questions and probe and challenge yourself to get beyond the routine of what you already know. So that would be one option. Then the second option would be to do a planning project. If you're struggling in the area of planning, organization, use of time, then it may be that it would be helpful to you to do a planning project. Now, my view is that, I mentioned earlier, that recording is the key to budgeting. You have to know where money's going to start writing a budget to adjust. You have to know where time is going to do the same. So I have here a 1 week's log where you would record to the nearest quarter hour or half hour your use of time all through the day. And so this is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then the back, the rest of it. Now, I did that on myself once for a period of 4 months because of the scheduling issue, because of the way my life was operating. It was a very hard discipline to get that down day after day in my diary. But out of that, I learned some significant things about myself. Now, I don't think most of you need anywhere near a month. Some of you, a couple days is adequate. Some would find it helpful to go as long as a week, but I don't think you need to do more than that. So the project would be to record on yourself for at least 2 days your use of time to the nearest quarter hour as you move through the day, and then to evaluate what you did with your time. And look at that in light of how you want your time to be used, so that you adjust your goals, you adjust your schedule accordingly, a little more realistically perhaps, but it will show you what's happening. In my case, I had wanted 50% in the office, 50% with people in the ministry. That worked out beautifully. I had wanted so many hours a week minimum in the job as I defined it, and that worked out well. But as I looked at where the people time was going, I realized the wrong people were getting an excessive amount of my time. And consequently, I was not fulfilling my responsibilities as a staff supervisor at that point. And it showed me why I was frustrated with my inability to help the staff as I had wanted to. I was not achieving my goals with them. And it was because they weren't getting adequate time. I was allowing my love for the grassroots ministry to usurp the kind of time I needed with the staff. So those are a couple projects. You can choose one or the other. And let's see, Ray, from the what you told me, I forgot. How long do they have to do this? Until May 1st? Oh, that's a long time. Maybe I better beef up the assignment a bit. Okay. Then there were four people I noted in their studies. I've spoken to Ron Lytle and Chris Galini. I have a thought that you may want to consider as a special. Ray, also, I have a thought for you if you wanted to do something different. And for Fred, I have a possible project that might be a little different. These were just things I happened to spot as I went through your studies, and I thought, well, this could be an option. Are there any questions now on the assignment? What I want you to do then is choose your assignment, do it, and then turn it in to me with your original survey and your original study. Okay? So that I get the whole package back. Well, what you do with that, you evaluate, what did I do with my time? How did I use it? Now, how does that correlate to how I want to use my time, and what adjustments do I need to make? What lessons do I learn from this? Yes. Okay, well, I thank you for your patience and endurance and perseverance. And Julie, would you lead us in a word of thanks that we made it through, committing our projects to him.